Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. Still a little bit hungover from the previous ep, Ben.
Adam, the cat is kind of out of the bag on our new show.
Oh, yeah, that cat.
Wildcat was written in a kind of obsolete vernacular.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, we got, I think this is going to come out well after John Roderick blabbed to Dan Benjamin on Roadwork about it.
I think one thing we've learned about John is that he wouldn't hold up under harsh interrogation.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is that, like, I don't think we actually ever had an agreement to keep it mum or anything. It just sort of had been my assumption.
Yeah, there was no embargo on the news, though. In our way, I think our plan was to do a ton of work behind the scenes and then launch the thing in a fully developed and great way.
Yeah.
An intentional way.
Right. Well, that's gone out the window, so let's do it this way instead.
Yeah. I'm really excited about this new show, Ben.
Tell the people what it's called.
It's called Friendly Fire. Yeah. It is a war movie podcast. And it has three hosts and not two. I'm one of them, you're one of them, and the third is John Roderick.
John Roderick, of course, maybe best known for his work as a musician. He was the front man, sort of still is the front man of the Long Winters, and has played with a lot of great bands. But he also is a veteran podcaster. He's been casting pod for a lot longer than either of us.
Yeah, He's a veteran of the pod wars.
He has an amazingly strong belief in the existence of podcasts, given the fact that he's never listened to a podcast, which is an amazing fact.
Would you ever put so much work into so many projects and never experienced their realization? That is such a bizarre thing.
Yeah, he's a real weirdo. Why are we working with this guy?
God, I don't know.
Well, John, the main reason we're working with him is he's really funny and has a very deep and broad knowledge of world history and can, like, culturally contextualize old war movies in a way that I don't think either of us would be as good at. And
right.
So we make it a fart joke, and he, you know, says smart and funny things about the movies also. But from a very different perspective.
I think it's a good mix of both. The dick and fart jokes that you enjoy from a Greatest Gen branded property. And maybe a little world history knowledge sprinkled in.
Yeah, it might be sort of like if Greatest Gen is oops all berries, then then Friendly Fire is like Cap'n Crunch with crunch berries.
If a Ken Burns documentary had, like, a fart track. That's what Friendly Fire is.
Yeah.
Never forget how much I loved you. Nor that when my last breath escapes me on the battlefield, it will whisper your name.
So that's coming early in 2018. And If everything goes great, it's going to be a new Max Fun podcast, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah, we hope it's a great big hit. So look out for that.
Adam, do you want to get into the episode we came here to talk about today?
Yeah, much like news of a podcast appearing from nowhere, so too does Q arrive on our fair station. It's season 1, episode 6. Q-less.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
And it's the return of Vash, Ben.
The return. The inevitable return of Vash.
Didn't know how much I missed her until I saw her again.
The episode opens with Bashir putting the moves on a lovely young Bajoran girl.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
Well, Chief O'Brien creepily sits at the next table. I guess, Bashir and O'Brien go on to have a friendship, but at this point, I think O'Brien just thinks Bashir is a total asswipe.
This scene gets a whole lot darker if you consider that the whole reason O'Brien is there is to protect the Bajoran from something fucked up from happening.
Or what if the Bajoran is like really excited and nervous to talk to Bashir and she has O'Brien whispering things to say to him in her ear?
Like in a Roxanne kind of way?
Yes, that's the thing that invented that idea.
You always reject my Roxanne references, man.
I'm just saying, don't forget that Cyrano de Bergerac is canonical Trek. We saw Barclay dressed up as him.
You know what? With every scene that we get in the Deep Space Nine lunchroom, the more I'm convinced that there's maybe 14 people that live on the station.
That lunchroom seems too small.
Why are people sitting so close together?
Yeah. I think I've read that the station has like a 4,000 person capacity. Like it's way bigger than the Entrepreneur. You know, if the Entrepreneur can dock at it and they can also have a bunch of other starships docked also.
There must be whole parts of it that are just a ghost town. And I wish this show explored those parts of it a little more.
Right. Like, do they have like sections of the habitat ring that are off limits because there aren't people there and it'd be too dangerous to like, do they ever like catch Jake like sneaking into the no man's land and getting in trouble for going through like junk that the Cardassians left behind?
If I were a kid, that is the first place I would go. Have you ever been to an airport with a totally closed down terminal?
No.
It's creepy as hell because there's so much life teeming around it. And then there's like most airport terminals, a super, super long hallway that you can't even see the end of that's just empty and roped off. And I would love to see a little bit of that on the station just to get a sense of its size, because most of the exteriors we're seeing of the station right now don't have ships docked outside. And so our sense of its scale, I think, is diminished.
Yeah. Well, O'Brien and Bashir both get called away.
Dr. Bashir, Chief O'Brien, report to landing pad 5.
Which is a huge relief to O'Brien, probably the Bajoran girl, but crushing to Bashir.
Bad timing.
Bashir's just in a constant state of hypo spraying the blue out of his balls.
They get to an airlock where a runabout has docked and they can't get the door open. In this episode, Adam, transporters don't exist, so this is a big problem.
And also the whole manual latch system. Like, I guess that's a thing that exists on the station but does not exist on a runabout.
Yeah.
It feels like there should be a latch from the inside because it's not like they've lost consciousness inside the runabout. They're just sort of waiting and running out of air.
They're definitely not, like, in great shape in there, but it takes O'Brien like strapping a car battery to the door mechanism to get them out. And the doors open and they run in and Dax is there and some other doctor is there. And then Vash is there. And O'Brien immediately recognizes her. I guess he kept up on the like local gossip when he was stationed on the Enterprise.
Yeah, how could you not? Everyone had a subscription to the Us magazine of the entrepreneur.
Yeah, the page six of the entrepreneur.
Captain Picard, he's just like us. He goes out on dates. He gets tea.
Captain Picard spotted eating a chocolate croissant. Pretty saucy, Cap. So that's our dramatic reveal, but not dramatic enough, because they all walk off the ship, and there's a Starfleet there looking at the battery that O'Brien plugged in, and the camera pans down to the Starfleet, and he turns around, and it is Q. Yeah, and it seems like they walk away without noticing that he's there, so... And I would say that perhaps John DeLancey's performance in this is a perfect encapsulation of his presence in the episode and the episode's existence entirely, which is the look on his face is kind of like, why am I here?
Oh, how dare you. This episode is an opportunity for John DeLancey to take over this brand new Star Trek show. And I think he does, capably. I feel like Nana Visitor is looking at John DeLancey and she's going, finally, someone who is my equal.
Yeah, certainly Sisko never acts big.
So Vash is sort of an instant celebrity as someone who has been in the Gamma Quadrant for years, it turns out. She's come back with like a dirty mail sack full of trinkets that she's gotten there. And this is the beginning of a development that I don't quite understand, which is, if the Federation is so excited about the things in the Gamma Quadrant, why aren't they doing more than sending a runabout every once in a while through the wormhole to explore it? They're like, oh, Vash, your adventures must be so amazing. You've got to submit to an interview. You got to write a book that we can read. You got to tell us all about it, because clearly we don't care enough about what's inside the wormhole to send in like an exploratory vessel ourselves.
The wormhole has been open for 6 weeks now.
Yeah.
And the Bajorans were at great pains to lay claim to the wormhole. The Federation is all about shoring up the Bajorans' claim to the wormhole. Nobody seems to have actually ventured through, at least from what we've seen.
I don't understand it at all. For a Federation whose founding principle is exploration, the idea of just sitting there next to the wormhole, not really doing much about going in, is insane to me.
Listen, we've got three conversion vans. We'll send them through for like a few hours at a time every couple of weeks.
Vash doesn't seem to be super interested in the idea of her own celebrity. She is downplaying, if not completely obfuscating, her adventures there. She seems mainly interested in like the protection of the trinkets that she's got.
Yeah.
And she does that by sort of going into the station's safe deposit box room and talking to the banker there. This is sort of like an interesting world within the world to me.
I love this banker scene.
I love the banker scene too, because they're doing like an audit of all of her things, except like the very last item is
some kind of Promethean quartz
inside a box. The banker has been great about cataloging every item, but he does not catalog this one. He's like,
I've never seen anything quite like it.
And he sort of shrugs his shoulders, and then bank helper sticks the thing in the safe deposit box without accounting for it at all.
Yeah.
What the hell, Vash?
End inventory.
It seems like she should be more protective of this thing that is obviously the MacGuffin.
Right.
It's fun to catch up with her, though, right? Because like the last time we saw her, she was like cutting a deal with Q to like go steal artifacts all over the universe. And it's fun to see that paid off. Like, oh, yeah, like here she is with a bunch of cool artifacts that she would never have gotten had it not been for Q.
Intermittently, Q just sort of pops into her periphery and is like, clearly they've had a falling out. She doesn't want to be around him or go adventuring with him anymore. And he, for some reason, is very interested in maintaining the relationship. There's something about her that is interesting to Q in a way that can't be satiated in any other way.
I find it interesting that O'Brien is aware of Vash, but not aware of her relationship with Q.
Is it Sisko that asks O'Brien, like, what Vash's deal was?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they, like, Sisko is immediately suspicious of her. Because as far as anybody else knew, this wormhole opened up 6 weeks ago, and she's claiming to have been in the Gamma Quadrant for 2 years. And so he's like, let's look into this, because I don't, you know, I don't want to be told I'm Christopher Columbus and she's fucking Leif Erikson or whatever.
Sisko has got to be incredibly frustrated because...
Don't email me that Christopher Columbus was a monster. I'm aware of that.
Sisko knows that there's no chance that they'll ever do the amount of research that Vash has been able to do. So he's fairly irritated that Vash has made plans to leave the next day.
he's very interested in stalling her. And further, he's interested in getting her to go do Daystrom Institute with her artifacts so that they can be studied properly. Like, he kind of has a similar motive to Picard in this way. Like, there's a bunch of scientific interest in the stuff that she knows and has brought back, and he'd like to see that stuff, you know, hit the museum before it hits the gray market.
Sisko has to know that Vash is also a pariah in the scientific community.
I mean, he does. Yeah, he talks about the fact that she's been selling. She's got a bad rep.
Well, when it comes to choosing between science and profit, I'll choose profit every time.
The Daystrom Institute basically wants to use her for her trinkets.
Yeah,
it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Daystrom Institute would rather not have a relationship with her, but if it's between that and everything showing up on Electronic Bay.
Yeah, I mean, clearly the Daystrom Institute doesn't have the resources to send any ships into the Gamma Quadrant. So they'll take what they can get.
I mean, they're no Vulcan Expeditionary Force, right?
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Along the way, we get little breadcrumbs about how much O'Brien seems to know about Vash and her relationship with Captain Picard.
Vash and Captain Picard were friends. Close friends, if you follow my meaning.
Like, Vash asks O'Brien how Picard is, just in a, you know, in that way where when you run into the friend of an ex, you sort of politely, you know, make conversation about the ex while clearly not really caring about the answer to the question.
Uh-huh.
I feel like that's what Vash is doing by asking about Picard. I feel like she gives no shits about him.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have like a sports team in common, so this is all they have to talk about.
O'Brien says something about Vash and the captain.
The captain likes a good challenge, sir.
As if he has any idea of what sort of woman the captain likes. I thought that was way talking out of his ass.
Yeah.
I mean, O'Brien didn't even have a relationship enough with the captain to say goodbye to him before he left the ship.
Yeah, the captain had to be the one to do that. So,
right.
Weird that he would go out on that limb.
I guess there was that scene before Picard beamed him over to Deep Space Nine where he told O'Brien all about what sort of women he likes.
In case this comes up in conversation, Miles. Can I call you Miles? Speaking of challenges, Adam, O'Brien has a big one on his hands. There have been these graviton surges that keep causing power outages. They experienced one on the runabout, which is why the door was stuck. But now they're happening on the station. And like, over the course of the episode, more and more, they'll be like up in ops and all the computer screens will blink out. And I think my favorite part is Kira, like, really laying into O'Brien, like...
You know, if we have one of these outages during a docking procedure, we could lose an entire pylon.
You need to get this shit fixed.
This has really become a show about how far everyone is inside O'Brien's ass about every single problem on the station.
I've double-checked every system. For the first time in a month, there's nothing wrong with any of them.
And he's really stumped by this, because like every time, everything is in place and it's not broken, so... He can't.
Can you imagine what kind of sick shit O'Brien's into on the holosuite, given what his work life is like and what his home life is like?
Yeah.
Like, what is his escape?
Just choking things. Choking everything.
His programs are way more violent than... they're more violent than Worf and more sexual than Riker. He's just fucking next.
Oh, God. The other character that's real interested in Vash is Quark. And I think Vash had like a Ferengi buddy when we first met her. So she's kind of the human that is... She's like kind of a Ferengi in a human body in a lot of ways. And so Quark sees a kindred spirit in her and proposes a business transaction where he will broker an auction of all of her valuable crapola that she's brought back from the other side of the wormhole, and he'll take a cut.
50-50.
Mr. Quark, I believe you're trying to take advantage of me.
And they have a very gross, erotic scene where she massages his ears while she works him down on the percentage split.
Have we seen ear diddling before?
I feel like they maybe did it with Lwaxana at some point.
Right. Yeah, I do remember that.
This feels like
this feels way more masturbatory.
It feels like that, and also feels like they have made a very emphatic choice to make that a canonical Ferengi thing, which it could have just been left on the trash heap of TNT, you know.
She like basically takes him to the ground by his ears. I wonder if they work in the same way as like if she were to twist them, would that be like the most painful thing to visit upon a Ferengi?
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. Like it's like taking one in the balls.
Have we ever seen a Ferengi with one ear? Because it seems like if you were to get into a fight with a Ferengi, like ripping off one of its ears would be the most rugged thing to do to him. Give me that one-eared Ferengi.
Yeah, you don't want to get in a fight with Mike Tyson if you're a Ferengi.
No. That's a lot of good meat there.
Q kind of wins me over once her business dealings with Quark are up and running. He really resents this, and he even goes so far as to call Quark a little troll. I was like, yeah, right on, Q.
That's what it took to win you over?
Finally. Finally, I'm pro-Q.
That's great.
Q is definitely the jealous boyfriend in this, right? Like, he's doing everything he can to get other men away from his lady, and the way he deals with Dr. Bashir is by making him very sleepy.
Bashir seems to be a sexual weapon without a target. He's taking on all comers. He sets his sights on Vash immediately and hits on her in that way that is generally frowned upon in the medical community during an examination.
No sign of disease or malnutrition or parasitic infections.
You sound disappointed.
I am. Now I have no reason to keep you here.
Not great.
Yeah. Like, the way Bashir talks to women is unacceptable, right?
I mean, the thing about the complaint against Quark is that it was, like, stipulated in a contract that is tangible. But we are 6 episodes into this show, and the evidence is mounting against Bashir. In a fairly negative way.
Yeah, not good. Not great, Bashir. As Bashir gets sent off with a bad case of the sleepies, the camera pans back and we reveal O'Brien noticing the presence of Q, but Q not noticing the presence of O'Brien. despite the fact that he's kind of looking right at him. So O'Brien radios up to Sisko and says that Q is on the station. And I guess as a commander, Sisko has been made aware of the existence of Q.
I love this story within the story. I wanted to know more, though, about how the Federation shares news about stuff like this.
Yeah, he describes a briefing, which sounds really interesting. Like there's a PowerPoint with different like speculative stats on Q. Can change the gravitational constant of the universe at a thought.
Can turn boys into full-grown men.
Mischievous.
Who gives that PowerPoint? It's got to be Picard, right?
Maybe. I mean, I feel like
I get the sense that he's a slide reader, which is good.
Right. He's not saying the thing that's on the slide. He's saying something that augments the information on the slide.
Except we've seen Picard give presentations. Like that one presentation he had to give about archaeology, and he was, remember when he was just fucking boring as hell?
Yeah.
So maybe he's not the right guy for this.
That was also a Q episode. That was the one where Vash came back.
That's right. Man. It turns out boring PowerPoint presentations are a main through line to the Q stories. It's in the show Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There must be a show Bible for DS9. I've never seen one before.
Is there a show Bible entry for Q?
In the TNG one?
Yeah. I mean, I imagine there have to be rules that govern his usage, even though, like, he is all-powerful and all-knowing. Like, how do you put a fence around a character like that? I imagine there has to be a chapter.
Pages on the Borgs, the Klingons, the Romulans. No. No Q entry, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, why would they? He's only the deus ex machina incarnate.
Yeah. So Sisko is now aware of Q and goes down to Quark's bar to try and, you know, shake the trees. He's like asking Vash where he is and what's going on. Q reveals himself and they get in a... old-timey boxing match where Sisko punches Q in the face a bunch of times.
Come on! Isn't this all wonderfully barbaric? Go on, take a poke at me. I know that's what you really want to do.
And I feel like this is just a scene that is like, what would Picard not do?
Picard never hit me. I'm not Picard.
So let's do that.
Yeah, it's a scene that exists to underscore Sisko and Picard's differences.
Because it's not like punching Q is going to hurt him, you know?
If there are no stakes to the fight other than the proof that Sisko and Picard are different people, then you don't need to have the fight to prove that. Like, what would have happened if Q broke Sisko's neck? And then once the scene was over, like, fixed him back into normal? Like, to me, Q chooses not to be the threat to Sisko that he proves himself to be to Picard. And I don't understand the reason for that choice. Like, Q's essential dangerousness is not really pronounced here.
Yeah. I mean,
by throwing the fight, especially.
Right. In TNG, Q is letting, like, thrown spears go through Wesley's belly and shit, you know?
Yeah. There seem to be real stakes. And maybe it's because because Q is fighting for a relationship versus the idea of proving some point.
Like, what is Q? I feel like they never really establish what Q gets out of the relationship, though.
There's no way Q's crushing that puss, right?
I mean, maybe, but like, why, you know? If he's a being of pure energy that's all-powerful and all-knowing, like...
What does he need with joys of the flesh?
Right. I mean, I feel like he's made fun of joys of the flesh before.
You know what? That's the core of the problem of this episode, is because we are left wondering what the attachment is between them. And not in a... not in a way that, you know, makes you wanting more, not in a like Ross and Rachel, will they, won't they, or like Picard and Beverly, when are they ever going to kind of way, just in a, no, we're just not going to tell you what their possible connection might be.
Right.
Even though any sort of connection would have been more interesting than the lack of one that we get here. What if Q's interest in Vash was purely motivated by getting at Picard, like in a way that he has not been able to rattle him before? Like, that seems interesting to me.
Yeah.
If the idea of winning Vash's heart is doing it at Picard, that's fascinating to me.
Totally.
Like, because what's the one way Q has not been able to hurt Picard? It's like on that kind of emotional level.
So you're saying that this episode was written for the wrong series?
Yeah, I kind of think so.
I don't know that I disagree. I think that this would have been much more interesting set on the Enterprise, like, a year and a half after we last saw Vash. Like, right. She comes back and is like, Picard, please get me out of this deal with this being.
Yeah, I mean, instead we got Sherwood Forest or whatever, which I was shocked to hear was a callback that O'Brien drops, even though O'Brien was nowhere near that situation. Like, that must have been in Us magazine again.
Right. I read all about it on Starfleet Tumblr. Vash is like walking to her big auction and, Q is like,
do you remember that tiny little insect bite you had on Erebus Prime?
And he like lets her succumb to a bug bite she got one time that he prevented from affecting her. And like she flashes a bunch of time and she's like losing her hair and getting boils all over her skin and going all gray. I don't feel like they gave Jennifer Hetrick like a great sense of what this was supposed to evoke. Or maybe they didn't know what it was supposed to evoke, because she's doing like when she goes all like old and crone looking, it's like, it's insane how big she gets with the like wobbling and hooking right. up her hands and stuff.
The damage seems to be to her vanity.
You're so ugly. You're so ugly.
You know, versus her fears of her mortality here.
Yeah.
Like, and there's something about her physicality here that made it seem that way to me. Did you feel that way?
The way she played it could have looked good if the camera had been framed a little differently. But one thing I wanted to talk about with this episode is that almost 80% of the shots in this episode are like somewhere between a cowboy and a medium single. Like, there are very few shots even that have two people on screen.
Right.
And when they do, it's because it's just a dirty single of somebody. And they are all, like, it is relentlessly the same framing every single time. And it's, like, it's so relentless that, like, cutting between scenes is jumpy a lot of the time.
Right.
And I feel like you really leave an actress out in the cold when you just, like, frame them up like a cowboy shot and say, like, act old. You know? Like, it's bad. Like, if the camera had been tighter, the way she was moving would have been much more jarring and upsetting. Or if it had been wider, your imagination would have had to do more of the filling in about, like, what exactly is going on with her skin and stuff. But, like, it's, like, the perfect wrong framing for the kind of movement that they went with in the take. And I think that it's bad directing.
What I really could have gone for is sort of like the Thriller close-up.
Right.
Like, show me the nails grow, and then the ECU of, like, the hair falling out or something. Like jump around a little bit. You're totally right about this.
And so this scene that should have, like, a real impact, like, really be upsetting, it winds up being kind of corny and dumb and making Q look more like an asshole than a existential magical threat.
Right.
So they have this auction, and the station is getting, like, worse and worse. You know, everything's really falling apart, and they can't even figure out what is causing the problem. They think it's something on board the station, but they can't pinpoint it. So they're trying all this different shit of like flooding the station with poison gas and using the internal sensors to ill effect.
Now, when you're trying to figure out what's wrong with the station, the first thing you're going to want to do is flood it with poison gas. I like to use a 1 parts per million mixture.
Any higher density of the gas and you'll all be dead in 3 weeks. Make sure to plug up any sewer lines before you flood the station with gas. You don't want those gases interacting with sewage backflow.
It's so dumb. This is their first idea.
It's their first idea. It finally works. Like it is just barely in time do they discover that the MacGuffin crystal that Vash brought on board is the source of the graviton problems. They Sisko slaps a communicator on it and beams it off the station. Quark has been promised 1 million bars of gold press latinum by Q for this thing, and is very upset when he loses control over it and it goes off the edge of the station into space and turns into a magical manta ray, which is a real far pointy feeling idea.
Sure is.
And it flies away into the wormhole.
It was a space flounder the whole time. Ben, I want to talk about the auction scene just a little bit. We get a variety of aliens here that I'm not sure we've seen before.
Yeah.
We get a little birdman.
Yeah, I like that birdman.
In the back.
I like those blue gauze face guys.
Yeah, the embarrassed New York Giants fans with the blue bags over their heads. Really fun variety here. I thought that was cool.
I thought this scene would have been 10 times better, though, if Quark had whipped out some Southern auctioneer skills.
I think dentally, a Ferengi makes that a linguistic hurdle that he could not get over.
Yeah.
We get, and we're two in a row here, Ben, I feel like, we get another slide whistle ending in which it's made clear that Dr. Bashir has slept through the entire emergency in a Chris Farley in the Hibernol sketch on SNL kind of way.
You can't buy stronger medication in this country.
What's all the commotion about, guys?
I honestly did not even notice that he was not in the episode.
Yeah. That's a big problem, I think.
Yeah.
Did not miss him.
He
relieved that he was gone.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, the other character that's not much in the episode is Odo. And I think Odo interacting with Q would be really interesting because Odo has some kind of supernaturalness about him. And is also a character at this point that is shrouded in mystery, and Q is all-knowing and all-powerful. I feel like they are much more interesting two characters to go up against each other. And also, Q is so silly and Odo is so serious, you know?
I completely agree. And who is more of a security threat than Q?
Right.
Odo should be all over his ass.
He should be frantic to figure out something to get rid of him.
He should be all over him in a totally different way, too, if Odo's entire deal is figuring out if he's alone in the universe, where he came from, et cetera, who better to ask about his origins than Q? I would jump over my table to go talk to Q about where I might have come from if he's a guy who might know.
Exactly.
But he's totally absent.
One other thing that I think is weird about this episode in particular is they've kind of canonized a few things about the Ferengis, and one is that the Ferengis are hopelessly weak on business if there's any sex on the line.
Mm.
And I think that makes them such less interesting of a force in the galaxy. The second somebody is stroking Quark's earlobes, and it happens a couple times in the episode, he's just out to lunch. And I think that it'd be so much more interesting if they, you know, like, business is this thing that is, like, almost totally alien to the Federation, but is something that is accommodated and a part of the life of this station. And so, like, if he was actually, like, really talented at business, like, that would be, I feel like that'd be more compelling to watch, too.
I agree. It would make him more of a threat in a couple of different ways, too.
Yeah.
In a way that I feel like he should be.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the scene where he and Riker debate, you know, a bunch of money that he owes Riker. And it's like, you know, like, I feel like the Federation should have people that grow up in a moneyless utopia should be worse at dealing with Ferengis.
Is it more important to have comedy or to make Ferengi a viable, serious alien race? I feel like it really is a decision that's that simple, and I feel like the show has made that decision.
Yeah.
Like, in matters having to do with the Ferengi, we will veer toward comedy. Like, we just can't abide the idea of serious Ferengi business or politics. I don't know why that is, because I think there's room for both.
Yeah.
Like Quark is a hilarious and interesting character, but fully developed characters contain multitudes.
Yeah.
And the intention of making him more simple in this way, I think, just limits the possibilities of what you can do with him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, from now on, you could never take him seriously in any business dealing with a woman, like, because there will always be that Achilles ear.
Oh, I'm glad we got to Achilles ear, Adam. Did you like this episode?
No, I didn't. But you know what I did like about talking about it is talking about all the ways that it could have been improved. Like, it's one of those eps.
Yeah.
And I feel like we don't get these very often, where we wrote in the margins of this story and we punched it up quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is so close to being a really good episode with just a little bit of tinkering. It's not the sort of tinkering that would require a lot of budget. Like, you could solve a lot of these problems with dialogue.
Sure. I think you could solve a lot of the problems with just having more interesting camera framing, even.
Yeah, really fairly disappointing, especially when I feel like if you're a new Star Trek show, you want to fire your cue gun at your show, you know, to make it count, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want Q's arrival to your Star Trek show to be, like, a big thing. And, like, by the time this episode ended, I was like, what was it for?
What did we learn?
Where did Vash end up? Where did Q end up? They just sort of went their separate ways.
Yeah.
The resolution was fairly unsatisfying. And it wasn't like, by the end, Q, like, raised his fist to the sky and was like, I will get you, Vash. Like, there was not even a threat of his return ever. It was like, well, Sisko, I may see you again. You'll see a white flash when I return.
Yeah.
And be on the lookout for that. Like, it was, they couldn't even do the threat of a return in any heavy way.
I mean, the existence of the Q character as this like impossibly powerful judge of humanity. Like, that's how he was introduced. And, like, this sort of, like, loses the nerve of him being that, which, like, I don't necessarily mind, but it doesn't take him in a more interesting direction.
In matters having to do with story, I am never about the defanging of a character, especially a character like Q. I want more fangs. Give me all the fangs.
Fang it up.
For Q, especially.
And fang it out!
Yeah. Like, make him dangerous. He's totally dangerous, but he's not in this episode.
Yeah, like, he... He's specifically not the thing that is dangerous in this episode.
It's bizarre.
Well, Adam, do you want to see if we have any Priority One messages?
That's one thing that's never dangerous.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first Priority One message is from Patrick, and it's for The Greatest Generation. Hey, that's us. Goes like this. Thanks for an amazing run, fellas. That's it. Hey, you're welcome, Patrick.
Thanks, Patrick.
We had a lot of fun doing it. We'll go now.
I hope Patrick's still around.
Yeah, I don't know. I really wonder, like, we don't really have any way of knowing, like, what people we shed because we moved on to Deep Space Nine and what people we added because we moved on to Deep Space Nine. Like, one thing that totally blows me away is that our download numbers have not really dropped on a monthly basis since we went to one a week. Like, they dropped, like, a tiny, tiny bit, but not much at all. So, I mean, that makes me think that a lot of people came on board for Deep Space Nine, but I don't know.
Or they're still working through the backlog.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It always amazes me when somebody says, all right, I'm all caught up. I found your show 6 weeks ago.
That is 180 episodes.
Yeah.
In 6 weeks. Like, that is a rate of podcast consumption that I personally find impossible.
As somebody who is constantly innovating ways to get out of my own head, it's amazing that anybody wants to spend that amount of time with me.
Yeah, spend that amount of time getting in. Jeez. Ben, our second priority one message is from the Razgals. It is for Plavim.
Oh, good.
It goes like this. Anybody? Has anybody heard from Team Plavim? Is it really a team if they don't even buy a P1? The dream is empty. Wake up and join the team that hates Plavim. Hashtag Razgals.
Man.
Trigger, Raz, Brittany, Jason, Josh, Kimberly, Leif the Gooch, AJ, Amy, CJ, Ella, Eric, James, Jesse, Michael, and Sam.
Man.
That's the end of the message. It appears as though Razgals as a roster has grown.
Yeah, that's a longer list than I remember.
Unclear if Team Plavim has grown in equal measure. I guess we'll never know. We're not going to know that until they buy a P1, Ben.
Yeah, I guess we'll just have to wait and see, Adam.
If you'd like to purchase a Priority One message, you don't have to wait and see. You can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Personal messages are $100, and commercial messages are $200. They're one of the finest ways to ensure the ongoing production of our program, Ben.
Thanks, guys. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
Sure did. My drunk Shimoda was a laugh-out-loud moment. It was it maybe was one of the only interesting camera frame decisions of the entire episode. It occurred during the auction. Quark is surveying the room for an increase in bidding, and a six-finger hand shoots up into frame.
600 bars of gold prince lap.
Fun.
Just a hastily puttied on sixth finger with a new high bid, and a six-finger hand raiser is my drunk Shimoda, Ben.
Very nice. I also laughed out loud at my drunk Shimoda, also a character with no name or anything we know about them. So if you scrub your player to 28 minutes and 26 seconds, this is the scene right after Vash leaves the safety deposit box and is on her way to the auction. Q is kind of holding her up in the hallway. And this extra is walking behind her that is, like, trying to get past. But he's also just got, like, the biggest grin on his face. And I kind of interpret this as just, like, this guy is so fucking excited to be on Star Trek right now.
I noticed that guy, too, right away. He really stuck out. He's like, one of those guys that didn't know how to walk, too. like some people walk on camera without being noticed, and he seems so self-aware,
like, annoyed that he can't get by them, like,
yeah,
like he doesn't.
It's almost like his face knows that the shot is blown. like there's no way that they're gonna keep this one.
Yeah, like the last, like, the most of the time while he's on screen he is very joyful. The last, like, instant you see him, he looks embarrassed and, like, guilty, like he blew the shot. You know.
I love that guy.
Yeah, good guy.
Yarmouk, Angelad, and Tanagra.
What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off. I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
Next episode is season 1, episode 7. Dax, Lieutenant Dax's former self, is accused of murder. What do you think about this episode, Adam?
We're just playing all the hits in season 1, Ben. We got to get a courtroom episode.
Yeah.
Out in the first half of S1, and here we are.
Sure. Okay, I'm going to go to the random number generator and find out if we will be doing this episode drunk or not drunk, Adam. God,
I forgot about our sword of Damocles over every episode now.
Adam, the number generated is 13, so we are in the clear.
Okay, I'm relieved and disappointed.
Yeah. I think that's sort of where we're always going to be when we wind up not doing a drunk one.
Relieved and disappointed, also my resting state throughout college.
Well, Adam, our resting state is hanging out online with our legion of viewers, who are just a real swell group of people who we feel really lucky to get to interact with on a regular basis. We
do this, a compulsion, Ben.
We do this on Facebook. There's a Greatest Gen Facebook group. There's also a Greatest Discovery Facebook group. And I believe there's now even a Greatest Orville group, which is an unsanctioned Orville podcast that doesn't have a podcast, just a group, I guess.
I'm excited for them to actually start a podcast with that name.
They'll be hearing from our lawyers.
Right.
There's a Greatest Gen subreddit, which is also a tremendous amount of fun, and the Greatest Gen hashtag on Twitter, where Adam is at Cut for Time, and I'm at Benjamin R, A-H-R.
Support for the show is appreciated at MaximumFun.org/donate. We also have merch items from our years of doing The Greatest Generation available. Ben, it strikes me that we need to come up with a Deep Space Nine specific piece of merch, and I wonder what that's going to be.
Yeah, I think the next thing that we're going to try and do is an Uxbridge Shimoda t-shirt, which I'm really excited about, because the great folks at the Hoffler Company designed a logo for Uxbridge Shimoda that is great. So that'll be a t-shirt once we finally get our acts together, and then we got to come up with something good for Deep Space Nine. Who
that
knows what it'll
both
be?
Shows the Uxbridge Shimoda logo.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's like that's one that I feel like I should have.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, we should thank Dark Materia for our theme music, and Adam Ragusea, who is assimilating our theme music, resistance being very futile.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And another episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, that is, swapped gavels for balls.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.